This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And there's another car with more than 600 horsepower that has just been introduced. We'll tell you about that. We'll also tell you about a feud between Consumer Reports and a major car company. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at mercuryinsurance.com. Well, I'm Jack DeRad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. We're so glad he is with us. Chris is joining us from the state of Maine. I am in Southern California. Chris, thanks so much for being with us. It's great to have you, as always.
Thank you for having me, Jack. Sounds like a busy week for us coming up here.
Yeah, busy week of news, certainly. And I love feuds. They're always fun to talk about. It seems like Consumer Reports wants to pick a fight every now and then, and they have done so this week. So we'll talk about that. This week, our special guest is Toby Russell. He is co-CEO of a very interesting company called Shift.com. They are a competitor to Vroom and Carvana. They'll sell you a used vehicle online if you let them, and you probably will let them after talking to Toby. So if you ever wanted to buy a used car without going through a traditional new or used car dealer, and I know that is your dream, isn't it, Chris?
I do like shopping from home.
Yes. So Shift could be the answer for you. We'll give you the details and talk with Toby Russell. In the road test segment, I am absolutely blown away by the high-class vehicle that Chris is detailing for us this week. Tell us a bit about the vehicle you're going to road test for us, Chris.
I was impressed by it, too. I drove the 2021 Mercedes-AMG E53 sedan, if you can get all that in one sentence or one breath.
Yeah, it's a long breath. You really have to breathe in before you spit that out. The vehicle I am testing this week is the 2021 Mazda 3 Turbo. And I know Chris gets a kick out of me saying Mazda and then Mazda 3. That's just the way it is. I can't help it. That's their nomenclature. So it's an even hotter version of the car we have liked for a long, long time. So that's a little hint as to the road test and how that road test will go, but that's coming up in the next segment. Here's some of the latest automotive news from around the globe, and we hinted at this feud that's going on, and these are actually, I'm kind of surprised by the parties in this feud, because you have Consumer Reports, and Consumer Reports always likes to pick fights. I think every now and then, maybe to get their names and name in the paper or whatever, they put something out there that is very controversial. And this time around, their adversary is not a traditional car company, but it's Tesla Motors. And so I found that interesting in and of itself. But they are upset about the driver monitoring systems that Tesla uses. They assert the Tesla vehicles now record and transmit video footage of drivers and passengers from in-car cameras. And then Tesla studies the footage from these cameras after the fact. And Consumer Reports is a little upset about this because they say there are a lot of privacy concerns in that. And I would have to agree with that. What's your take on all of that, Chris?
Yeah, that doesn't make me feel good. And I don't know, and I haven't seen, maybe you know this, is it an opt-in? So do you have to allow them to do that, or does it just happen by default? When you get in your car, the camera comes on?
The camera is off by default, but when you turn it on, I'm not certain that Tesla is letting their drivers know that Tesla can monitor that footage. You know, maybe there is in the terms of use that stipulation. What Consumer Reports is pointing out is that other automakers like BMW, Ford, Subaru, a lot of them have driver monitoring systems. They use cameras to do that. But it's a closed-loop system, and basically it doesn't go anywhere. It goes within the car, and it's the car monitoring to see that you're not dozing off at the wheel, that your head isn't dipping, those kinds of things. I think the privacy concern here is that, and I would certainly have this as a Tesla driver, what's going to happen with that footage? Is it going to be used against me in some kind of lawsuit? Let's say I have a crash and Tesla asserts that I was at fault and not its self-driving system, for example, or some other part of the car. I mean, I don't necessarily want to be video. I don't necessarily want to be videoed in my entire life and have every bit of my life then reviewed by others. So I can see a little bit of concern there.
Yeah. And, you know, reading some statements from Consumer Reports, is Kelly Funkhauser, who is their program manager for vehicle interface testing. She's spoken to us here in New England quite a bit at MIT on various topics and is very knowledgeable. And she's got the stance that, you know, Tesla could be doing this to kind of cover their rears in the event of a crash, right? Because they're showing that people are getting into these serious accidents while dozing or playing video games or whatever they're doing behind the wheel of the car while it's in the quote unquote autopilot mode. But this might be a way for Tesla to kind of wiggle out of some of the fault there. But again, anytime you're recording video, I mean, that can fall into any number of the wrong hands and be just a privacy nightmare, like you said. So even if they're using it for what we would deem, you know, good purposes here, it just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, I have difficulty with it too. And like I say, I value my privacy. It's one of the things I value among others, you know, more than anything else. Certainly right up there, my privacy is something that I think we all should be concerned about. And I also question, would the government, would state and local or even the federal government want to monitor our driving and want to request that footage if it were available? I mean, who knows what could happen with that kind of footage once it got out there. So if there are any kind of system that's monitoring driving, I'd like it to be a closed loop system that just assesses whether I need a cup of coffee or not and doesn't go anywhere else.
Absolutely.
Here is another story, and this is a story about a recently introduced BMW. It is the BMW Alpina B8 Grand Coupe, and it's a great car. Alpina is kind of an interesting offshoot or division within BMW because it has the twin goals of producing really fast cars, really premium cars, and at the same time, cars that are comfortable for everyday use. You see cars like the AMG car that you're going to talk about, Chris, maybe in some ways more appropriate for the track than it is for everyday use, and we can get into that. But Alpina's mission is to provide really fast cars that are also great on the street for just tootling back and forth wherever you're going, right? So kind of interesting. You pay for all of this. This vehicle has an MSRP of $139,900, plus a very low destination charge of only $995. That's much lower than, say, many mass market brands, oddly. But this is a 612 horsepower vehicle that will go from 0 to 60 in 3.3 seconds. So pretty fast. Just kind of an amazing piece of work there. What's your take?
Yeah, sorry. You know, you hear the term coupe or grand coupe. It's a big vehicle. I tested the standard, I think it was the 850 or the 840 last year. And man, it was a big car. You got plenty of room front and back. And to be able to muster that kind of performance. And, you know, I've always loved the Alpina, the ethos of, you know, speed, but also comfort, like you said. And so, you know, it's not all that much more expensive, you know, in the grand scheme of things than the regular M8 or the standard, you know, 8 series. So more power to them.
Yeah. Very cool. And you mentioned the BMW M850i xDrive, which is, I guess, an alternative to that. And I would say probably the Alpina is a more comfortable and somewhat more premium car. One of the cool things about it, and it's because I have a bit of an affinity for this from years back, is it has rear-wheel steer, which I think helps it be more agile at slow speeds and then it gives it more stability at higher speeds. So a lot to like about that. And it will go, according to BMW, to a top speed of 201 miles per hour. Kind of a mind blower.
Yeah, even though I can't think of any place in the United States that you can legally do that outside of a track. So we'll see, but impressive car nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hard pressed to think. I guess it's legal somewhere in Europe on some of the autobahns that still have unlimited speed, but pretty much nowhere else. So there you go. Well, in any case, we will be back with our road test segment, and we will be road testing a Mercedes-Benz AMG vehicle. Chris, you're testing the AMG E53 sedan, and I'm testing the Mazda 3 Turbo. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, Jack Nierad with you, and we'll be right back after this on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nierad back with you for road test time right here on America on the Road. Of course, this is one of our favorite segments in the show because we get to tell you about vehicles we've driven over the past week or so. And wow, you were a style master this week, or maybe a style meister this week, Chris. Tell us a bit about the vehicle you were driving.
I was. You know, it's funny, we get the press loaner vehicles. They almost always, in fact, up here, they always have out-of-state plates. It's probably not the case for you in California, but it's always funny to have such an expensive, flashy car in Maine with like Georgia plates on it, which I think is what this Mercedes had. But I spent the week in the 2021 Mercedes AMG E53 sedan. This is a car whose base price starts at $73,900. As tested, I was just telling you before we came on air, it has a Toyota Corolla's worth of options on top for a total price of $101,780. And it's, you know, and I'm going to probably get some flack for saying this, it's kind of easy to see where that money goes, at least in this car. So the standard Mercedes, I believe it's the E450, if I'm not incorrect, has a 3-liter inline six with a turbocharger. It puts out about 360 horsepower, 362. This car, from its 3-liter turbo, put out 429 horsepower and 384 pound-feet of torque. Very quick car through a 9-speed automatic transmission to all four wheels through 4MATIC Plus all-wheel drive system, which is just a delight. Inside, full of technology, a 12.3-inch digital driver display, 12.3-inch touchscreen. Some of those options that added on to that price tag were active seating, which adjusts the seat bolsters as you're going around a corner. So you turn right, the car's left seat bolster improves or sticks out a little bit more to hold you in the seat. Full suite of safety tech and suede leather interior. But the real story here is how it drives. And we were just talking about the Alpina cars in the last segment of how drivable they are on the street and how appropriate they are for high speeds or even just highway driving. And to a degree, that's true for the AMG as well. Although this car is equipped with options for track performance and track, it has software to track your performance on the racing circuit. So it is definitely equipped to do time on the track, although as a midsize sedan, I don't know that this would be a car that a lot of people take to the track. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I really wonder about that too. I mean, I wonder why you would ever have that on the track. I mean, certainly it's trackable. And what I think about a lot of AMG vehicles is I love their performance. Don't get me wrong about this. I think a lot of the wrong people are probably buying them when they go into a Mercedes-Benz dealer. And let's say they want the best E-Class, right? So what would the salesperson point them at? They'd point them at this vehicle, the vehicle you're talking about, right? I mean, that's certainly premium versus the basic E, which is premium enough as it is. And so people who don't necessarily want more performance and would actually like more comfort and convenience are getting into these essentially race, almost race kind of cars. It strikes me as a little off in some ways. It certainly works for Mercedes-Benz in terms of selling more expensive vehicles and getting more margin and getting more margin for their dealers. I just wonder if the right people are buying these. I mean, what's your take on that, Chris? You were in this vehicle for a week. What do you think about the 65-year-old driving around in this thing?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, if you go into the dealership and you say, "I want the best one," they're going to give you this car or its older, bigger cousin, the E63. But in both cases, these are pretty hard-edged cars. Even though there's room for kids and families, and you know it's pretty comfortable, you're low to the ground. The seat bolsters are heavy. Steering is very sensitive, and it's very quick. You know, we can't get around that, and it's loud, and you know you make it loud, but it's you know entertaining in those ways, but if you're just looking for the best Mercedes, this is probably not going to be the best car for you. I think the AMG needs to be a targeted purchase for those people because you're getting into a different sort of league with these vehicles. And for me, it's welcome, obviously. You know, I like the sounds and the feeling and the handling, and especially, you know, the acceleration without kids in the car, I should say. But definitely, I won't say a problem, but you know, it's probably not for the average E-class buyer.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think for an enthusiast driver like you and I, terrific, but not necessarily for that typical E-class buyer. So, but a lot to like about the car, certainly.
Absolutely. You know, and some of these options, you know, I mentioned seeing where your money goes, the $4,550 Burmeister audio system with the speakers that rotate in and out of the doors, or you know, it's a party trick, but at the end of the day, it's an excellent stereo, and those active seats I told you about, that's a $1,300 option. Again, excellent comfort at any speed, and heating and ventilation, and you know, massaging features. Those are all pretty upscale features for any car. But to have that in a car that can do 0 to 60 in the, I guess, the low four range, somewhere around there, 4 seconds, it's quite a thing to observe. But if you have the money and you're looking for performance and need room for the family when you're going somewhere and need room for cargo or whatever it might be, this car has all the space of a normal E-Class, a big trunk, big back seat, comfortable climate settings. And I think it looks great. You know, one of the pictures I posted on Facebook yesterday or the day before was it's just a delightfully angry looking car. You know, it's not a big car, but it definitely has the stance and the front end and the black trim and everything that comes with the AMG packages. It looks the part. So definitely an aggressive car and in the way it drives and in the way it looks. But if I had the money and was in the market, I would definitely give it a hard look, close look.
There you go. Well, I have something that's probably more attainable for us both to talk about, and that is the Mazda 3 and the turbo version of that, which has really got us excited. It's got me excited because we've always loved the Mazda 3, and I think, well, I certainly have felt that a little more horsepower never hurts, right? So that amount of handling, the sharp handling that Mazda 3 has always offered with a little more horsepower would be just swell. And now it's come my way. It's come all of our way for 2021. You can get a Skyactiv G turbo engine in the Mazda 3, and it's 250 horsepower. So that's pretty cool. Actually, the interesting thing about this engine, and I think we've talked a bit about it on the show before, is it offers 250 horsepower if it's run on 93 octane fuel, or 227 horsepower on 87 octane. So you choose your poison there. Little more torque, only 10 additional foot-pounds on 93 octane than on 87 octane, but more punch if you're using premium fuel. Which makes sense. It's less likely to knock, so it changes the electronic settings for itself. That's so the engine doesn't die, which is a really good thing. That engine is great and plenty of horsepower now. It is teamed with all-wheel drive, so it has the iActive all-wheel drive on all the vehicles that are turbocharged. This adds to the handling prowess. I didn't get to test it in anything, but just perfect weather because I live in Southern California, and it didn't happen to rain that week or probably that month. A lot less snow or anything like that. But on dry roads, works perfectly and adds to the handling ability of the already nice handling Mazda 3. And then it has torque vectoring as well. It has G Vectoring Control Plus, so it gets torque to the right wheel just for added stability as you're driving. This is an all-around sweetheart. It has a six-speed automatic transmission. You can shift manually, It has a sport mode. So this is just a sweet, sweet car all the way around. I mean, what's your take on Mazda 3 and on the Mazda 3 Turbo, Chris?
I totally agree. I think I talked about the Mazda 3 sedan not that long ago. And the addition of more power to that package is absolutely welcome. But no matter how you slice it, Mazda's done a great job with their entry-level cars. They're fun to drive. The interiors are super nice and comfortable for the price point. The technology is more than decent. It's serviceable in almost all circumstances. And the all-wheel drive system does make it a well-handling car, even in the snow. I drove one here, like I said, back over the winter and had a great time. So all around a car that I would buy without hesitation.
Absolutely. A lot of great technology as well. It has a 360-degree view monitor. Those are always nice. Helps you park. It helps me park up against our picket fence that's right out front of our house here. So that's nice. It has rear cross traffic braking. It has a bunch of active sense safety features, including cruise control with stop and go. So adaptive cruise control with stop and go, which is something that's very premium. Smart brake support, blind spot monitoring with rear cross traffic alert, and lane departure warning with lane keeping assist. So a lot of good stuff there. It has some additional appearance items like an air dam, spoiler, diffuser, that kind of stuff. 18-inch wheels. And we were talking about premium audio in the AMG E-Class that you were driving. This has a Bose premium 12-speaker system. Apple CarPlay and Android Auto are part of the program too. Leather seats, heated front seats. So this is a vehicle at $29,000, almost $30,000, which is, I would say, a lot of money for a compact sedan or hatchback these days. Not a ton of money, but quite a bit. But when you consider all the content here, I think this is an incredible bargain. I think the Mazda 3 Turbo is just an absolute sweetheart and one of the nicest vehicles all around and one of the highest value vehicles I think I've driven all year.
Yeah, it stacks up well against the competition. And like you said, it's hard to call that number, cheap or affordable, but it is a good value for what you're getting in the car.
And I think it would hold its head up against a lot of the luxury brand competition of its size. Stack it up against, say, an Audi A3 or A4 or something like that, or maybe even a BMW 3 Series, and we'll see how you do. Probably fairly well.
I think so.
And when we come back, we're going to be taking your listener questions, so stand by for that. It's an always amusing segment of the show, so stay with us with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you, right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad back with you, and it is listener question time. We love to take your listener questions. It's very easy to reach us with your question. Just write us at editor@drivingtoday.com, editor@drivingtoday.com. We will take your listener question and answer it on an upcoming show. We enjoy doing that, and we're so glad you're with us as well. If you like the show, please pass America on the Road to a friend of yours. Let them know that we're talking about cars every week on America on the Road, so we'd love to have them join us. Here is a listener question I've got, and I think it's quite a good one. This person is considering apparently midsize SUVs and asked the question, are there competitors to the Ford Explorer I should take a look at? What's your take on that, Chris?
I think there absolutely are some great competitors to the Ford Explorer that should be taken a look at. It's a big segment overall, but a couple really stand out here. So the first, and I'm going to say this, and we've talked about it at length, is the Kia Telluride. Its starting price is a little bit less than the Explorer, and it tops out at about $48,000, $49,000, which is less than higher trims of the Explorer like the ST. You won't get the sporty ST treatment like you do from a Ford if you want to opt for that, but the Telluride is luxurious inside and out. It's scored great in almost every category. And another good one to look at is the Toyota Highlander. So it's got a nice hybrid powertrain. The upscale finishes inside. The latest one, the 2021, is all but a Lexus on the inside. So if that's what you're looking for, that's a great choice as well. So those two would be my pick, although there are plenty in the segment to look at. Subaru Ascent has standard all-wheel drive and great safety features. So You can go wrong, but it's hard to in the segment.
Yeah, well, and but there are certainly better ones, and you have identified two really good ones to take a look at. My lovely wife Sandy and I took a long, long drive in a Toyota Highlander. We drove all through the Southeast. As a matter of fact, we went to the neck of the woods where you hail from, Chris, in eastern Tennessee during that drive, and we just had a great time. We were in the hybrid version of the Toyota Highlander, and that is a wonderful choice in terms of overall drivability and great fuel economy. What a great vehicle that is. And another one I would point out that's essentially the sister ship of the Kia Telluride is the Hyundai Palisade. Styling is a bit different. I think the Palisade is a little more traditional. It's a vehicle that actually looks bigger than it is. It almost looks like a full-size SUV, but it is a mid-size SUV that competes with the Ford Explorer. And so I would certainly look at that vehicle as well. A lot of luxury features in that particular vehicle. And there's a new calligraphy edition, which is their top of the line. It's getting up toward about $50,000 or so, but it is fully loaded. So certainly something to look at. And I would say, too, although we're considering alternatives to the Ford Explorer, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Ford Explorer. There's a lot of great variants of the Ford Explorer that are certainly worthy of purchase. So, as you say, Chris, a lot of good choices within that segment.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with the Ford, but if you're looking around, it's hard to go wrong.
Absolutely true. Well, here's another listener question, and I really want to hear your take on this, Chris, because I think it's a good question. And it's, should I look at a hybrid or electric vehicle when I buy my next vehicle?
Yeah, that's such a, there's a lot to unpack there. It's not just about the vehicle itself. So I'll give you my stance, and this is just because of where I live. I can't currently justify buying one because my state, Maine, I can count the number
by
of
By one, I think you mean electric vehicle, right? Not
yes,
hybrid.
Sorry. Yep. Yeah. Let me clarify. Hybrids are different, but for an EV specifically, it's hard to justify here because I can count on one hand, I think, within a day's drive of me, the number of public charging stations that are available. So if you're not if you're not willing to install a charger at your home or you don't have the ability to do that, you know, if you're in an apartment or whatever, you really got to take a hard look at what's available for you in terms of infrastructure. Because even if you're able to buy the car, if it fits your needs, if you can't charge it, then you're kind of out of luck. And hybrids, I think, are a bit different because they don't rely on a charging network. And I think that as long as it meets your needs in terms of space and power, if you need to tow, that's something you should look at. By all means, go for it. You know, even if you do need to tow, the Ford F-150 with the Power Boost powertrain has done very well and has some really innovative features that go along with that. So, absolutely no problem recommending a hybrid, but I think as much as I love EVs and I'm excited to see them come to market, it's hard to recommend without knowing what exactly is going on around you in terms of, you know, infrastructure.
I'm absolutely in line with you, Chris, on this. As I was reviewing some vehicles recently, and I just wrote the review of the Hyundai Elantra HEV. Of course, the Elantra is a compact sedan. And it's all new for 2021, and one of the variants is a hybrid electric vehicle. And it struck me as I was writing about it, and I then compared it with some other vehicles out there. Of course, there's the Honda Insight and the Toyota Corolla Hybrid are two very logical comparison vehicles. It struck me, maybe this is the golden age of hybrid vehicles. You know, I was thinking that maybe time had passed hybrids by as people were jetting off and doing electric vehicles. But these recent hybrids that I've been writing about and reviewing are terrific. They really are terrific. And the premium you pay for them isn't all that much. To get added drivability, they essentially drive better than the conventional gasoline powered vehicles in many cases. Because they can use that added electric motor torque when it's valuable to use. And then they get stellar fuel economy. This Elantra I was writing about gets fuel economy of over 50 miles per gallon. That's, you know, hard to turn up your nose at, right?
Yeah, you're not wrong. You know, you can't ignore a fuel economy benefit of, you know, 20, 30% in some cases, and these cars are becoming more affordable every day. So if we live in a world where everyone's driving a hybrid, I see absolutely nothing wrong with that.
And you also see mild hybrid systems now on a lot of vehicles that give that added fuel economy with almost no cost penalty or a very light cost penalty. So those aren't as elaborate a system as in the Elantra, say, which is more of a dedicated hybrid vehicle. But that also is something to consider. You're seeing a lot of mild hybrids, essentially with that motor generator. I think we might have even talked about that in a recent show. That just gives that added drivability and extra fuel economy boost that's a big advantage.
Yeah, and it's even more fun, like you said, with performance boosting. The Mercedes that I tested in the last segment had has a mild hybrid as well. So all for the benefit of performance and even fuel economy too. So I'm all behind it.
Right, and I think that is pointing out that we're getting to a mainstreaming of some of these mild hybrids where it's not even something that is front and center and you would necessarily point to or talk about very much. It's just a part of the car, and I think a valuable part of the car, and I think that's the right way to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, when we come back, we will be doing our interview with Toby Russell. He is the co-CEO of Shift.com. So if you want to buy a car without talking to the traditional used car dealer, Toby's your man. Shift.com is your place. So we will talk a bit about that. In fact, more than a bit, because we'll be talking with him for about 20 minutes. So look for that interview with Toby Russell coming up. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. We're so glad you're with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you. And what a special guest we have for you today. Toby Russell, I think, has been with us before. He's the co-CEO of Shift.com. And he might be the answer to a lot of car buyers' dreams come true, because if they dream of buying a car without going through the traditional dealer process, well, Toby is the guy and Shift is the place. Toby, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me back, Jack. It's great to be able to spend some time with you here.
Bring our listeners up to date on Shift, what you offer, just a kind of general overview of your company, your website, your apps, all of that stuff.
Really simply, Shift.com. We sell cars online. We make it really easy for folks to be able to find the best cars out there. I'll talk a little bit about what best car means, and get access to them either by just buying it right there on the website, or having that car brought to you at your home and being able to test drive it from home and then buy it right there in your driveway. The cars we select are disproportionately cars that someone else was driving. So we're really buying from sellers and connecting those cars with buyers. The idea being that the car that someone else is currently driving, that they bought new, one owner, no accidents, 10 to 12,000 miles per year, strong options package, but older, like 4 to 8 years old, is kind of the sweet spot. That's the thing most people really look for in the used space. And that's what we select for at Shift. We do a quality inspection and make sure that we get that thing, as we call it, Shift certified, with a 30-day free quality guarantee and then extended warranty financing, as you would expect when buying a vehicle.
Right. Are you really positioning the vehicles you sell as kind of nearly new? Is that how you would look at them?
So the statement in our marketing, as it were, is used cars never felt so new. The cars are not new. We believe that used cars are absolutely the best place to be seeking value. But we look to break the trade-off that most people face. And that is, they say, hey, on one hand, I want the quality and the peace of mind of a new car, but I don't want the expense of a new car. I would rather have the value of a used car. And our goal is to make that trade-off possible. The idea of being able to get the value of a used car, but with all that peace of mind of new car.
Let's talk a bit about the peace of mind, because that's the reason a lot of people shy away from buying a used vehicle or pre-owned vehicle, as it's sometimes referred to in the industry. How do you offer peace of mind that maybe others or people would not get elsewhere?
First and foremost is the way we select vehicles. So the vast majority of our cars are not being bought from like auctions or areas where there has been multiple stages of what we call negative selection. You know, somebody had it, they didn't want it, so they gave it to a dealer. The dealer couldn't sell it, so they handed it to a broker. The broker couldn't exchange it, so they handed it to an auction kind of thing. What we do is we go direct to the person who typically and ideally bought that car new. They're like, hey, I want to go buy a new car, and we're interested in taking that car and connecting it with a new owner. And so starting with the type of vehicle is a really big deal, because what, again, I tend to suggest that people look for when they're searching for a new car is that relatively few owners, that 10 to 12,000 miles per year, strong options, no accidents, and then being able to buy that used car. But the reason you want it used and not new is because then you get all the depreciation benefits. What do I mean? In buying a new car, you go out, and this is kind of blows my mind that this still happens, but you have to negotiate with the dealer. They have all kinds of information advantage. They know the ins and outs. So even if you win that negotiation, though, which is not a foregone conclusion, blows my mind that we still negotiate for new items. But even if you win that negotiation, you drive that thing off a lot, and you're going to lose $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 in depreciation immediately. Not the case with a used vehicle. The used vehicle's already gone through that massive depreciation drop. And so we really select for those cars that have already gone off that depreciation decline. So you get the benefits as a Shift customer of not getting that rapidly depreciating car. But the concern is, hey, is it a good car? We do 150-point inspection with an AC certified mechanic, do repairs, bring it up to what we call our retail standard. Shift certified is the name that we put on that. It comes with a 30-day guarantee. And in addition, you can buy extended coverage up against those cars for years. When I bought my Audi on Shift, I bought a 4-year extended warranty. Because, again, I wanted that used car value, but new car peace of mind. I don't want to get stuck in a situation where I'm having to do lots of repair expenses.
How do you get one-owner cars? Do you go to individuals or advertise that individuals sell cars to you? Or are you buying a lot of these from dealers who have taken them in either as lease returns or in trade? You know, what's your source of supply?
That's a great question, Jack. And that's really where the company got started, was online. It turns out that in the old days, someone would say, hey, I want to know what my car is worth. And they would like drive around to dealers, and dealers would say, well, if you do a trade-in, then we'll give you this amount for your car. Now people go online and they say, sell my car. Shift, we do require the vast majority of our customers right there on our website at shift.com. And we were the first in the U.S. to provide an instant quote for what your car will sell for through Shift. We spent a lot of time and a lot of engineering and software development to make that possible. But that was a key focus of ours, because we see that as the critical opportunity to be able to get the cars that are in a lot of ways pre-loved and that someone has had, and connect other people with those. So we really do that entirely in an online fashion. The way it works as a customer is if you enter your quote and schedule an appointment, we actually send someone out to your house. They'll come and take a look at the car, and then right there on an iPad app, push a button to send money to your bank account, and then drive the car, and you don't have to deal with it anymore.
And that really answers a lot of consumers' questions. Back in the day, it was fairly easy to unload, shall we say, a vehicle that you had. You could sell it to a neighbor or something like that, sell it to another private party. Now that's in a lot of ways problematic. Part of it is problematic because the amount of money involved is much higher than it used to be. And the other thing is just privacy concerns, safety concerns. You're advertising the fact that you have this very valuable asset and maybe bringing people that you don't want to your home or place of business or some neutral site. So it really does answer a lot of consumer questions, doesn't it?
Absolutely. That's actually how we ended up starting the company, was observing and having gone through it. I sold the car through Craigslist, in fact, and found that it was just a really scary and not pleasant experience. What you go through this whole like, hey, is somebody going to show up to my house with cash? Do I need to bring the car to them? Will they steal the car if I bring the car there? Like, and then what do we do in terms of title transfer? How's that going to work? It's important we do that right. If we get it wrong, does that mean that this person could go and like incur tolls and tickets and I'm liable? Like, what happens there? And I found that just really harrowing and scary. So I started looking into it and discovered that something like half of the used cars that sell in the U.S. actually are sold between from person to person. And disproportionately, those cars, when they're sold person to person, are very low dollar value cars. Why is that? Two things. One, for the reason we just mentioned, handing off cash, and so it's kind of dangerous. And two, there isn't really financing available to a buyer who wants to buy a car from a private party. And so we said, hey, we should change that entire dynamic, make it easy for people who want to sell their car to sell it, and for people who want to buy a car to buy it, put financing and all the kind of capabilities of repair, financing, and a warranty into that to enable that exchange and address that, what I think is a huge need, and that is being able to have trust and safety in selling or buying a car, particularly a used car that you can trust like it were new.
Right. We are talking with Toby Russell. He is the co-CEO of Shift.com, and we're so glad he's with us. Obviously an expert on auto retailing and used vehicle retailing and the newest style of vehicle retailing. Walk our listeners through a typical purchase on Shift. They're looking for a particular car. Let's take a two-year-old Toyota RAV4, for example, as our example of a car they might want to buy. I mean, certainly hundreds of thousands of people are buying those every year, so a pretty popular vehicle. Walk us through that, would you, Toby?
Absolutely. So you start by going to shift.com. People most often say, Shift, what is that? Like shifting a car, shift.com. From there, you can shop cars. There's a couple paths you can go. You can browse and filter all the vehicles that we have, or we've added a quiz where you can answer a series of questions and we'll recommend some vehicles that might make sense for you. Either way, you narrow down to the car that you want. In the case of the RAV4 there, Jack, what you do is enter in RAV4 on the website. It'll show you all the RAV4s that are available, and then you can compare and contrast those. You pick the one you'd like, and you push a button on that. You can either buy it right there on the website, so place a deposit and then purchase that car and have it shipped to right directly to you at your home, or you can push a button to ask us to bring it to you to test drive, a no obligation, without buying it, bring it to your house, and you can take it out for a test drive. You drive that thing from your home, and if you'd like to buy it, we've got an iPad app that will walk you through all the financing, warranty, and purchase documentation that you would need, so you can purchase it right there in your driveway in like an hour. It's an incredibly smooth experience either way, and the core philosophy really is working back from what we view a customer wants and needs, and that is to be able to buy cars on their terms. There's no negotiation involved. The prices are all set algorithmically based on price to market, and we're competitive and selling for less than the average listing in the marketplace. And it's easy to find, shop, and then if you need to do a trade-in, we'll also allow you to take your car and apply it for credit up against the total purchase, so you can swap cars, essentially, trading in a car and getting a new car if you'd like it.
Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned shipping, right? I don't believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think some of your inventory is someplace and some of your inventory other places, right? I mean, talk a little bit about that and what's involved with that. Obviously, if you're buying something much smaller than a car online, a shirt, a pair of shoes or something like that, they get shipped to you, and if you don't want them, you ship them right back, and it's pretty easy peasy. But tell us how that works with a car.
That's exactly right. So as you can imagine, the way, say, Amazon has distribution centers all around the country, we have what we call hubs in multiple cities around the country. From those hubs, we will place the car you want to buy onto a truck. I'm sure everybody has seen these on the highway where you're driving and there's, nine cars up on the back of a truck getting taken from one place to another. We will either have that truck go straight to your home or nearby to a hub where one of our associates will then take it and drive it to your home. One way or the other, it's right. You can't just take a car and put it in the U.S. Postal Service. Instead, it moves from our hub to you either via truck and or via what we call our concierge, so the folks that would do the last mile delivery to your home.
And talk about shipping charges, because I think the shipping charges come into play a little bit. Walk us through all of that.
So if you are local to a vehicle near the car where that you're purchasing, there wouldn't be a shipping charge. But if the vehicle that you want is a ways away, depending on the distance that you want to ship that thing, there will be varying charges. And those are listed right there on the website. It is dependent on where you are and where the car is.
Makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. Can you give us some kind of range as to transportation costs, or is that too nebulous to put out there?
It varies pretty widely. It's, you know, zero to a typical shipping charge to move a car across country, like think really far, you know, like San Diego to Maine or something like that, can be in the $1,000 to $1,500 range. So it can be up to like, you know, 10% of the car value, depending on the vehicle that you're looking at. But that's pretty rare. The vast majority of vehicles have a few hundred dollars, if any, shipping.
And do you recommend that visitors look at inventory that's near them, or does that really not come into play so much?
So generally, you've heard me say it a couple of times, I recommend that visitors look at used cars. You know, friends don't let friends buy new, because you don't want to spend the $2,000 to $3,000 depreciation right off the lot. But from there, I tend to suggest that folks look at cars that best meet their needs. I personally don't think of the shipping as a critical determinant of the car that you're going to drive for the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. And the pricing that we tend to put in place is sufficiently competitive, we believe, and that's what the market's telling us, that a couple extra $100 on shipping, if that's what's needed to get the right car for you, I wouldn't encourage that to be the thing that would determine whether or not you're getting the right car. What I would suggest is looking for, does the vehicle have accidents or not? Does it have 10 to 12,000 miles per year? Like oftentimes you'll see cars coming from, say, like rental car companies where you're looking at like 30,000 miles a year. Want to look at that and be aware of that. That would be like above benchmark and an unusual wear for the age of the vehicle. You do want to look as well to see that it has a strong options package, the set of things that you're interested in. You know, are you interested in a backup camera? Do you want to be able to have a sunroof? Are those things that are important to you? Depending on where you live in the country, something like if you're, and depending on what you're shopping for, potentially a thing like heated seats could be a big deal for you if you live in the north and it is cold. So I do encourage looking for the right options package. And then of course, this may come as blindingly obvious, so I even skipped it, Jack, is the right car. If you've got a family and you need a third row of seats in the back of an SUV, you wanna be looking for that. All those features and capabilities you can look for on shift.com, because we wanna make sure first and foremost that we're getting you the right car and a great experience. And so those are really the kinds of things that I coach folks to look for and to home in on as they're looking, less so of like where the thing is, because if it's plus or minus, I don't know, you know, we stretch and we do everything we can to reduce the prices as much as humanly possible for our customers, which is why on average we sell several percent below what you're going to see listed on any dealer site. But the plus or minus 100 or 200 for shipping, I wouldn't encourage as your like primary determinant on the car that you're going to drive. I'd work on getting something that meets your needs.
Yeah, well, certainly meeting your needs and maybe paying an extra $100, or maybe not an extra $100, but a couple of $100 or whatever it is, to get the right car is absolutely worth it. And avoiding the negotiation dance might be worth $200 to a lot of people right off the top, too. Tell us a bit about the trends in online retailing. Certainly, this has taken even more hold during our COVID-19 experience. Walk us through that, how that has changed things and maybe accelerated your business a bit.
Absolutely. Folks for a long time were saying, hey, online retail is coming and it's going to come to auto just like it has to every other area. We can talk a little bit about the rest of American retail and how it has evolved, if that's of interest. But in the auto sector, I would say that auto was well behind the rest of retail progression when it came to online. And I don't think it's because people don't want to shop online. And I don't think it's because people don't want to buy online. I think it was hard for dealers to fulfill. Every dealer kind of said, hey, I know I'm going to need an online strategy in like 3 to 5 years, maybe 7, but you know, we'll get there. And in a lot of ways, COVID-19 brought a very different environment. Suddenly the safety realities were such that you kind of need an online plan and the ability to sell online immediately. We saw a time when major retailers like CarMax were actually shut down in big states like California. That's a pretty intense impact on an industry when it's saying from 3 to 5 years out, this needs to be true to like right now. We saw a significant increase in website traffic and interest in purchasing online. And I think folks are seeing that that is actually not only possible, but a better way to shop and purchase. Why? In an online environment, there is none of that price negotiation, let me take advantage of you. There is transparency as to the vehicle and the capabilities. And the next generation e-commerce players, folks like Shift, are able to say, look, we're doing a thorough inspection and we stand behind the product because we're driving and creating a national brand in a way that you haven't seen in the history of local retail in the industry. But you've seen that in other retail, and that is brands coming out, standing behind the products in ways they might not have before. So I think we've seen essentially 5 to 10 years of progress happen very quickly during the COVID-19 pandemic out of necessity.
Absolutely. And a lot of necessity there. And it really has changed auto retailing. There are others who are doing online retailing, not dissimilar in ways to Shift. What do you think your secret sauce is? What do you provide that, say, a Vroom or Carvana does not?
So one of the things that we talk about a lot is really our focus on consumer vehicles. We focus in on getting those cars that folks are driving and that we think other folks will want. One of our primary focuses then is consumer choice on how they want to buy that car. 96% plus of people start their shopping journey online. And then the question is, where do you want to go from there? Would you like to buy the car right online? Shift will do that. Would you like the car brought to your house to test drive it before you commit to buying? Shift will do that. Would you like to come to one of our hubs and be able to literally like walk the warehouse, kind of more Costco style, as it were, and maybe even test drive a couple cars? Shift will do that. Our philosophy is very customer centric, best cars and best experience on both dimensions. And we stand behind that and are driving that focus. And we believe and are seeing that really differentiates us from other experiences out there.
Yeah, it seems to, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about financing. I imagine most of your vehicles are financed one way or another. And certainly everybody has their individual finance history that goes into what they pay, that goes into the interest rates they get, all of those things. Tell us how Shift sorts through all of that.
It's another great question, Jack. When we started the journey of Shift, we actually didn't start with financing. We didn't offer it because we were like, hey, look, what's critical is that people be able to get the cars that are the best cars, and let's make sure we're connecting people. But very quickly, the first thing that buyers said was, hey, that's great. I love this car, but like, do you have financing for that? And we thought, oh, we're going to have to solve that. We're going to have to do something. For a while, we started doing this referral program where we'd refer folks out to credit unions and other entities that would finance the car for them to be able to purchase it. But we realized very quickly we needed to build that in as a core feature and capability because of the desire for buyers to be able to just make that seamless. And what we did was we built in essentially a marketplace within a marketplace where a customer can apply for a loan either after having selected the car and gone on a test drive, like right there at their home on an iPad app, or ahead of time, such as going to shift.com and entering in the information to apply for a loan and get approved right there and then. And we built that out as a software experience where the customer will enter in information. We reach out to a bunch of different lenders, name brand banks like Capital One, Ally, et cetera, and bring back options to customers so that they can review and figure out what it is that will meet the best their needs from a financing point of view. It's an incredibly cool experience. It took a lot of effort to build that and make it an electronic and smooth experience for folks. But it was very much a result of, as you mentioned, Jack, customer demand. It's like, hey, you got the car, but now is there financing for that? And we said, there will be, and now there is. And it's a really great process and an experience.
Fascinating that you were able to put that together, and certainly a game changer, I imagine, for you. What should the consumer know that I have not asked you about, Toby, about Shift, that would help them understand your business and the way they can buy a used vehicle better?
One of the things that most people say after using Shift is like, oh my gosh, that was amazing. I kind of wish I'd have known about that thing. And most people don't realize, you know, we've sold, you know, tens of thousands of vehicles to customers all over the country. I think there are like three or four states maybe where we haven't sold cars, including, you know, Hawaii and Alaska. We've sold vehicles there. So one of the big things is just know that Shift exists is one thing we want to encourage. And more broadly, help encourage the trend of, you know, friends don't let friends buy new. This idea that used cars are great value. And if you find the right used car, it is truly a gem and the thing that you should go with. We're in the business of trying to make sure we find those gems and bring those to people and make it really easy. And so that's the main thing that I would want folks to know about Shift is that, you know, we're on a mission to try and really transform what we see as an industry in need of being way better and much more customer-centric in the same way that e-commerce has transformed many, many other industries. And so we're excited about that overall change.
I think we both are, Toby, and it's such a pleasure to speak with you again. What you say begs a lot of questions, but unfortunately we don't have time to dive into them this time around, but I hope we'll have you back and talk to some about some other things as well. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Likewise, Jack. Take care now.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. I'm Jack DeRad. And that was our interview with Toby Russell, of course, the co-CEO of Shift.com. Fascinating stuff that they're doing there. And the fact that they will buy your car from you, I think, is an interesting way to go about disposing of a car, too. That's becoming more and more of an issue, is what do I do with my current car when I'm about to buy a new one? And maybe trading it in is not the answer. Maybe selling it to a company like Shift.com is. So I'm glad we had a chance to talk with him about that. I'm also glad that we had a chance to talk with our great friend Chris Teague. Always wonderful to have him as co-host. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I will take the time to thank everyone for listening. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review and hit the like button or subscribe button wherever you're getting your podcast. We'd love to see more people join up and come along for the ride.
Absolutely, we would. If you like the show, please pass it along to one or two folks that you think might like it. We'd love to have them join us. And I'd love to have people check out my book, The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. It's available at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, at local bookstores. So look for that book if you would. I hope it'll help you. It has helped me. Those techniques that I talk about in that book are very helpful to me in my daily life. So I hope they can do the same for you. So for Chris Teague, I will thank you for being with us. The reason we do the show is to help, and so we hope we have been able to help you over the course of this past hour, and we hope you'll join us again next time for another edition of America on the Road. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at mercuryinsurance.com.